Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Let's get to the docket. First, an update on the Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell, some new filings. Next, Ghislaine Maxwell. Yeah, she's not getting a new trial. A story from Texas. You smell that? That's the smell of freedom. Well, Southwest may want to bring back their old slogan, "We beat the competition, not you." And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. Before we open the docket, you know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't, like the video, share it, and make sure that you hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And just a reminder, that's right, it's Tuesday. So what does that mean? We have our Tuesday night live show. We will be discussing the Lori Vallow and Chad DeBell matters as well as answering all your questions immediately after our show. Then we'll do our live Patreon show. If you haven't become a Patreon, please do so. All right, let's go ahead and open the docket for Tuesday, April 6th, 2022. First, Lori Vallow and Chad DeBell. The big news of the day is, well, that's right, another one of those reports. A report from the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare has arrived at the court. The Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, through their attorneys, through the Attorney General's office there in Idaho, has filed a motion that the report and the filings be sealed, and Judge Boyce has granted the same, just like he has on the previous reports. As you may recall, when somebody goes off to the mental health hospital, the state hospital as it's referred in some jurisdictions, the hospital has to provide periodic reports as to the status of the person that is being restored to competency and whether they think that they are going to be restored to competency. Since we do not know the contents of the status report because of privacy issues, so the only way that we'll know whether Lori Vallow will be joining us again is if she is transported back to Fremont County and held at the local facility. That will mean that she has been restored. It'll be a restoration miracle. Anyway, we'll have to wait and see. Now, there's also a hearing set for April 19th of 2022, and that hearing is going to be live streamed. We will bring it to you live. Now, what else is taking place? You know, how many times have I said, oh, it's always about the money? And people scoff. Scott, you're too cynical. Scott, you're too jaded. How could you possibly mean that? Do you remember back in February of 2022, the prosecution filed a supplement and disclosure of the state's motion for the court to allow additional evidence and follow Idaho Code 19-1816 by transporting a jury. And the real basis for the motion to select a jury up in Ada County, transporting the jury down to Fremont County for a trial, was that, well, it was going to be really expensive. And I said at that time, it's always about the money. Now, Judge Boyce had previously ruled that neither Chad nor Lori could get a fair trial there in Fremont County, and therefore they moved the matter to Ada County. And since then, the district attorney has been trying to say, Judge, there's nothing that prevents us from selecting a jury in Ada County, select those jurors, sequester them, bring them down here to Fremont County, hear the trial that's scheduled to go some 8 to 10 weeks, and then we'll ship them back and all is good in the world. Well, on April 1st, and this is not an April Fool's joke, because I know some people take things very seriously around here, the prosecution has filed their supplement, and it is basically saying, hey, Judge, if we move the whole trial up to Ada County, it is going to be some $379,000, which is more than what we originally anticipated, basically another $100,000 more. And if they were to use the court clerks in Ada County, that would save roughly $20,000. If we were to bring the jury from Ada County, sequester them, and hold a trial in Fremont County, it would only cost $187,840. Big, big savings. So that's what the prosecution has filed, and they put it together in nice little PowerPoints for everybody. Let me look how nice that is. Isn't that neat? Look at that. Now, I understand the judge set a hearing to present testimony regarding this. Now, under the provisions of moving a trial, I don't see anything in there about cost being the issue, that that's something that the court should consider. Now, judicial economy, yes, that makes sense. So you want to send it to where there's resources available, there's building, there's plenty of jurors, things of that nature. But just because of the fact that it's going to be expensive, shouldn't really play in there. Now, Judge Boyce has previously ruled, hey, we're going to move this case to Ada, that's it. But then he does like lots of judges do, and he seems to be very accommodating to the prosecution. I would think the judge would say, I've ruled. And guess what? I would tell the prosecutors, start focusing on getting your case ready, because guess what? January of 2023, when this thing is supposed to start, is going to be here before you know it. So why don't you focus on that? Then you have the elected DA go to their county commissioners and say, guess what? We've got the biggest case going on here in the country. Justice is expensive. We as a community need to pay for this. But sorry, you have to find us some money to pay for these additional costs. Most jurisdictions have contingency funds so that these matters, when they arise like this, they can be taken care of. If there was some sort of emergency, they needed extra snow plows because of a snow, I'm sure they could find the money. Could they not? Of course they do. They always do. So cost shouldn't be a factor. My humble opinion is the judge has ruled. Why are we even having this hearing? And additionally, this is a death penalty case. So why would you do anything that is going to create an appellate issue in any way possible? Just don't do it. Find the money, move the case to Ida, give everybody a fair trial, and then we'll move on. Now, one thing we have to remember is the judge said the trial will go, whether Lori Vallow is there or not. I'm somehow betting she's not. And if you may remember, she's never made it even to initial advisement as it relates to the indictment in this particular case. The proceedings have all been stayed to her. You just can't one day say, here you go, go to trial. If she is found competent, let's say 3 months before the trial date, not going to happen. She has a right to look at all the discovery, to review it, to assist in her defense. There's no way this case is going to go in that particular situation if she's restored to competency. Once again, I haven't seen it. I'm just going based upon my experience. I don't think she's going to be restored to competency anytime soon to make it to trial. We'll all wait and see if my prediction is incorrect or whether I got it right. We'll wait and see. I know there's some people out there saying, oh, we're hoping you get it wrong, Scott. And I get it, but call it the way we see it. Next on the docket, we haven't talked about Ghislaine Maxwell in a while, but guess what? That federal judge denied granting her a new trial last Friday. I saw this story come across my desk, but there were just too many other things going on and we hadn't got to it yet. And as you may recall, Ms. Maxwell argued that her conviction for procuring underage girls to be sexually abused by that guy named Jeff was tainted by the presence of a jury who failed to disclose he himself had been sexually abused as a child. Now, I seriously think the judge made a mistake here, but hey, guess what? I'm not a United States District Court judge. Now, Judge Allison Nathan said that Ms. Maxwell's lawyers had failed to satisfy the requirements for granting a new trial in the criminal case. Judge Nathan wrote in her ruling that the juror had credibly testified during a hearing in March that he skimmed way too fast over the juror questionnaire before Ms. Maxwell's trial last winter, which asked prospective jurors if they had in fact been the victims of sexual abuse. Ms. Maxwell's lawyers argued that juror number 50 failed to answer with a yes instead of a no, as he did, and that violated Ms. Ghislaine Maxwell's right to a fair trial. But the judge wrote that based upon Juror 50's testimony last month, she believed that he was not biased and would not have been stricken for cause from serving on the jury, even if he had answered each question on the questionnaire accurately. As you may recall, there was a hearing held in U.S. District Court there in New York in March, and this hearing was held after juror number 50 gave several interviews with media outlets, and he revealed that he had been the victim of sexual abuse and that he mentioned that abuse to the other jurors in their deliberations at the trial. Now, juror number 50 first invoked his right against self-incrimination to answer any questions at the hearing by invoking, obviously, his rights to do so, which I'm sure his attorney told him to do. But then he testified under oath after being granted immunity, which means he's not going to be prosecuted from the prosecution, saying, oh, it was just a big mistake. I just flipped through that questionnaire so quickly. I didn't happen to read the last question at all. Oh, bygones. Forget about it. Well, I just find that hard to believe. And the judge's ruling saying that this juror would not have been excused for cause or even a peremptory used. What, does she have a crystal ball? Was she sitting at the defense table saying that, oh, we like this juror so well? I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, as somebody who has tried many, many sex assault cases over the years, if you have a victim of a sexual assault and you know about it, guess what? They're not going to be on that jury. It's just the way it is. Too many issues that come up, and they would not have been selected as a juror. So for the judge to say, oh, he was so credible, he would have been selected anyway. Like I said, what, did she have a crystal ball? Was she sitting at the defense table? Are you kidding me? I think the judge got it wrong. And like I said, I think the defense would have excused juror 50 had he been truthful, not lied. And well, I guess it doesn't matter because the judge said that, oh, he was so credible by saying he just skimmed through it. Well, if he had just skimmed through it by mistake, I wonder why he invoked his Fifth Amendment rights. Just something to think about. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of criminal defense. Even when the facts are on your side, you still get somewhat denied by the law itself. And I think the judge engaged in some legal gymnastics. But hey, you know, like the old joke goes, do you know what the difference is between a United States District Court judge and God? That's right. God doesn't think he's a United States District Court judge. Something to think about. Next on the docket. That's right, a story from Texas. Can you smell that? That's right. That's the smell of freedom. Freedom coming from Texas, at least for one man. Now, a Texas man who shot dead his girlfriend's ex-husband as the men argued over a child custody issue will not face criminal charges because the shooting has been determined by a grand jury to be self-defense. And that was announced by the Texas Attorney General yesterday. William Kyle Carruth opened fire on Chad Reed after the two squared up to each other and wrestled over a gun in Lubbock, Texas, back on November 5th of 2021. So a special grand jury was convened, and they found that Carruth will not be charged because the argument was on his property and the shooting was in self-defense. You gotta love it, ladies and gentlemen. There's some freedom for you, right? Come on my property, square up with me, and people can be shot dead. Well, things also get a little more complicated. Well, it turns out Mr. Carruth is the ex-husband of now former District Court Judge Anne Marie Carruth, and he was never arrested for the shooting, which his lawyers argued was completely justifiable, and the grand jury agreed. Now, Judge Carruth, who lost her bid for re-election in March, will be in office until December, divorced him shortly after the shooting, probably because he was with his girlfriend picking up the kid. Just maybe some reasons there. Well, the argument leading up to the shooting centered on a custody dispute over the children of Chad Reed and his ex-wife, Christina, who was dating Mr. Carruth. Mr. Reed's new wife, Jennifer, filmed the moment her husband was shot and killed by Carruth, and she ultimately released the footage. Now, the video could be described as possibly somewhat disturbing, and we're not going to put up the video, but some of the still photos clearly show that there's this argument about this 9-year-old son that should be outside before Mr. Carruth was shot dead. The video shows Reed can be heard demanding to see his 9-year-old son outside Carruth's house before he was shot dead. Like I said, we're probably not going to show you the video here in its entirety, but you can see from stills Carruth, who is in the black top holding the rifle, and Chad Reed wearing a teal top are seen in a grab from the mobile phone footage squaring off outside the home that reportedly belongs to Mr. Carruth. Now, Jennifer Reed is intending to sue Mr. Carruth for $50 million for a wrongful death lawsuit once the investigation has finished. We've mentioned this before. I get it's a terrible situation, but under the laws for wrongful death, guess what? His life is not worth $50 million. I understand it's emotional. Under the law, you're not going to get that kind of money, particularly when it's been already ruled a justifiable homicide. Anyway, she has stated that apparently in Texas, it's okay to bring a gun out to a verbal altercation and murder the ex. The special grand jury just was for show, according to her statements on Facebook. Now, investigators turned their findings over to the Texas Attorney General's office, which handled all of the prosecutions related to the case. The Attorney General said the presentation of the case included several eyewitnesses, family members of Chad Reed, and additional evidence that was not previously released to the public, according to the Attorney General Paxton. Now, after several days of thorough inspection of the evidence, the special grand jury concluded their investigation into the matter and deliberated on whether the evidence supported the filing of a criminal charge against Kyle Carruth. No. So that is it. And yes, apparently in Texas, you can bring a gun to a verbal argument. And if you feel threatened, even with the guy who's, you know, a little bit bigger, threatening you, guess what? In Texas, they call that self-defense. In some communities, they say an armed community is a polite community. I think I'd be a little more polite when the guy went in and got the gun. Just saying. Next on the docket, Southwest Airlines is going to have to go back to their old slogan, "We beat the competition, not you," just to make it clear for passengers like Antonio Sherrod McGarity, because he was arrested by officers at the Phoenix Police Department when his Southwest flight landed at Sky Harbor International Airport this past Saturday. Mr. Garrity told the police that he didn't do anything wrong, and in fact, he thought it was kind of kinky. That's right. Now, Mr. Garrity is facing federal charges for pulling down his pants and pleasuring himself at least four times, not once, not twice, not three times, but four times in front of his fellow female passenger, beginning shortly after takeoff, according to the complaint. Now, it is alleged in the criminal complaint that Mr. McGarity was seated in seat 11F and the female witness was in seat 11E. Shortly after taking off and while the aircraft was in the air, Mr. McGarity allegedly exposed himself by pulling down his pants and began pleasuring himself. When the female seated next to him noticed the lewd behavior, she began taking pictures of McGarity when he fell asleep after pleasuring himself for roughly an hour. The female passenger told a crew member about what she had witnessed and was allowed to move to another seat. When the Southwest Airlines flight landed, Phoenix police officers interviewed the woman, who reiterated what she had seen Mr. McGarity doing as far as pleasuring himself on these four occasions, using both his left and his right hand, leaving all the details. Filming it, you gotta admit, filming it over an hour, you'd think you'd want to maybe get up. What was there, turbulence or something? Like, get up and leave, right? Anyway, Mr. McGarity also was interviewed by the FBI, who allegedly admitted to his in-flight behavior. And guess what he said? Mr. McGarity advised that he asked the female witness if she minded if he pleasured himself, according to the complaint. And according to McGarity, the female witness put her hand in the air and said, "It really doesn't matter." McGarity thought that response was kind of kinky, and he believed that the female was comfortable with him pleasuring himself, according to the complaint. A Southwest spokesperson said that Mr. McGarity has been slapped with a lifetime ban. And I'm sure Mr. McGarity thought that slap was a little kinky too. You can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. And next, our dumb criminal of the day. A Missouri man wearing a Biden is an idiot t-shirt was arrested Friday for drunk driving. According to the police, Randall Westveer, he's 71, was collared by state troopers and booked into the Boone County Jail, where he posed for his mugshot with his Biden is an idiot t-shirt. He was ultimately released on a $500 bond for a misdemeanor DUI. Not to be outdone, we also had previously Dalton Kyle Lunt. He was the 26-year-old who was able to fashion his Let's Go Brandon t-shirt while posing for a mugshot following his recent arrest in Alabama for driving under the influence. Couple things come to mind. Who's the idiot now? And those in glass houses shouldn't necessarily throw stones. Wouldn't you gentlemen agree now? Okay. If you're going to criticize others, better be doing it cleaner and better than everybody else. All right. Can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Thanks for watching. That's all we have for you today. We will see you tonight at 6 p.m. Mountain Time for After Dark. We're going to talk about Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell, and then we'll go straight into our Patreon show. We'll see you then.